Oh, you want more?
More.
Oh, this good?
More.
Oh, wow, that was extreme.
More. Edging with Tucker and Maura.
Podcast. Sorry.
You okay? You're still losing your voice, eh?
I'm still getting it back. Didn't take me long to lose it.
It's crazy.
I just screamed once or twice on our radio show, and then it just went. It's a pretty fragile thing, that voice, I guess. That's why singers have to learn to sing from their sternum or their, what is it?
Well, yeah. You want to bring it down, not sing from your throat. But I think, like, artists who do a lot of, like, screamo have to learn how to scream properly. You need to learn how to scream properly without ripping your vocal cords.
I know, right? Is it, I have to build calluses, probably, something like that, eh?
What is this sound?
Oh, my phone just started making noise.
Weird.
It is weird because it was down. It wasn't doing anything with it.
That's super weird.
Phone's always listening, right?
Yeah, for
and
sure.
Siri hears a little piece of something and thinks, I wasn't even touching it.
What,
it was
you
upside
watch,
down.
You watch now, you're going to get advertisements for like throat stuff.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Maybe. Yeah, sorry for that little intrusion. That was just like an Instagram reel that somebody sent me that wasn't even that funny.
Oh.
You know, thanks. It's become the... Do you guys get a lot of stuff, people just sending you a video and you're like, I don't really care.
A fan of that.
It's like the forward, the email forward. Remember that became such a big thing? Oh, great. Like early days, it was, great joke you had to read.
Yeah, and then you had to send the email on to like 10 other people or you're going to die or something like that.
I know someone who died because they only sent it to 9 of the 10
oh, yeah.
that they were required to. Yeah.
Crazy.
That was so stupid.
By the 9th person, they're like, I don't have anyone else I can send it to. And then all of a sudden, it was a giant piano fell from an apartment.
What are the odds, eh?
Right on top of them. They're like, oh, no. Oh, I should have sent that email.
Super lame.
But, you know, most of us are superstitious in some capacity. And you get sucked into that. And you're like, oh, no. But what if I don't do it?
Mm-hmm.
I know it's garbage. But if I don't do it and something bad happens, it would have been so easy just to forward that off to 10 people.
I had a girlfriend who I really respect and admire send me one of those not too long ago. Like maybe 2 years ago.
Like and it was, forwarded on kind
yeah,
of thing?
Yeah, but it was more like... it's supposed to be kind of like self-help for women. And it was supposed to be that I would pick, I don't know, 3 or 4 women that I really admire. And I would take some sort of quote or something that has inspired me and I would send it on. And then I would get these 3 women to also participate. And because I like her so much and admire her and a lot of her stuff has inspired me. I thought, well, damn, all right, I'm going to do this. And I immediately regretted
it. You spammed people.
Because I sent it to 3 women that I admire, including like a woman who just won like an award for directing at the Canadian Screen Actors Guild thing.
Who will never work with you ever again.
Yeah. You know what? No one participated, including one of the women who I sent it to, sent it back to me and said, I'm not doing this. I just wanted to let you know I'm not, you might want to pick somebody else because I just don't have time. I'm like, of course you don't have time. I'm an idiot.
I'm a dumbass. I still spend time on Facebook, but not so much to connect with people, more because I'm part of these groups. Like, you know, whether it's a marketplace to sell something.
Oh my God, marketplace is the bomb. That's all I look at.
Yeah.
I'm not interested in reading messages from people.
Yeah, I don't read people's statuses so much as I go on to different groups and I find out what's going on. Like, hey, there's a Sailing Lake Ontario one. If something's going on, it might make you aware of it, or people have questions, or you can ask people questions like, oh, what's this stuff on my, this part of my boat broke. Anyone know where I can go to get this part? And, you know, it's like a group
of people. It's
like a forum. It's a forum is what it is.
Why are they all on Facebook, though? It's just easy.
It's an easy platform to use, but every now and then I'll come across something and I'll see somebody I haven't heard from in a long time. They'll be like, hey, if you do this thing, you're going to see more of your friends and less garbage and less forwards. And I want to know if you're looking at my stuff. If you're a real friend, then you're going to reply and also copy and paste it to your thing and send it off. I'm like, fuck that. As soon as you ask me to copy and paste it,
forget it.
I'm out. If you want me to be like, hey, do you care about me as a person? I'll be like, yeah, you're a great person.
Yeah.
You know, keep on keeping on.
It's the chain.
Yeah, they just try and suck you into that vortex. I don't even know, like, whoever starts that, what satisfaction do they get? Is it if they see it and it comes around back to them, they're like, hey, I started that.
I don't know. Maybe they're just listening to Fleetwood Mac and they thought, hey, you know what's a great idea right now is the Chains playing.
The Chain.
I didn't see that coming for some reason.
are you going to rip on Fleetwood Mac? They're pretty good.
Going back. I love that song. It's a great song. I was just thinking maybe, you know, he was listening to that song or she was listening to that song. I'm like, I got a great idea right now.
Send that along. Anyway. How did we even get on that topic?
Your phone was listening to our conversation.
Oh, yeah.
That's how we got on that conversation.
Gotcha.
We were going to talk about drugs.
We were going to talk about drugs. Are we going to talk about drugs?
Yeah.
We, on our radio show, which can be heard on 102.1 The Edge in Toronto, we were talking about cocaine because somebody had found, like, was it almost $500 million worth of cocaine floating in the ocean?
Yes, just off the coast of Italy.
It was all kind of tied together. It had been dropped by one boat, and I guess it was expected to be picked up by another. But somehow, before that boat picked it up, people found it.
Interception.
Yeah. And it was, if I'm not mistaken, close to $500 million worth of cocaine.
That's right. Street value.
Street value.
Mm-hmm.
Which means, like, if you broke it down into individual grams, size portions, and you sold it that way, it would be worth $500 million. But I'm sure if you're buying 2 tons worth of cocaine, they're giving you a break, like a Costco type of discount on it, right?
Man,
sure.
I wonder how much you have to buy in order to start getting a discount. Like if I buy 2 grams, like if it's $100 a gram, which is what we kind of heard the price of cocaine was based on this conversation we had on the air.
Yeah.
If you buy 2 grams, is it 180? And then 3's 100, 200.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
How does it work? When do you get it?
When does the deal kick in?
Is it advertised? Is it on the sticker price? Or do you have to be like, hey, you throwing me a bone here because I'm buying in larger quantities?
It's always better to buy 3. Generally, if it's lotto tickets or anything, they start striking a deal at 3. The Princess Home Margaret, whatever,
yes.
Princess Margaret Home Lottery.
That's right. They do
they
strike
want
a
you
deal
like, at 3 and then 5 and...
Back in my day.
Back in your day.
You know, from what I hear, that sounds like it's more than it used to be because it used to be about 80. And then if you got, you know, double, it was like $1.40 for a little bit more. And then you could get a discount as the one up. So I don't know. It's been a long time since I've been in the game or been at clubs and stuff. I don't know what people charge for this.
So what you're saying is it doesn't need to be formed in the shape of a brick in order to start saving. That
no.
There's some discounts that come before
that come along the way.
We got a text actually during our show when we were talking about prices, and the guy said the pandemic really drove up prices for drugs, for street drugs.
Yeah, somebody who still uses coke said it's $100 a gram.
Yeah. So, but the story that is sticking with me is the guy who found the brick on the beach. Was he in Costa Rica? No,
Puerto Rico. Yeah.
Just a surf bum dude, you know, beach bum kind of guy, finds a brick and decides that he's not going to sell it or anything. He's going to enjoy it, and he's going to enjoy it with people in town. And he's in a little tiny village, and so he's having it, and he's passing it around to people at the local bars and stuff. And the drug overlords find out, and they chop off both his hands. That's what someone called and said on the show this morning.
Yeah, whether it's, we didn't fact check it, but but I have personal experience having dove in the Cayman Islands, and a woman that was on our boat all week, she told us she found a brick of drugs that washed ashore on the island that's called Little Cayman.
Mm-hmm.
There's only a couple hundred residents in the whole island year round. It's mostly just for people who are like diving. They go there.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, what'd you do with it? Like, do you want to sell that? What do you do? She's like, oh, I hand it. I called the cops and they took it because they didn't want to be like responsible for using it. I wonder, would a drug lord get mad at you if you gave it to the cops? Which is technically the right thing. Would that be okay for them versus you selling it yourself and making some cash or using it with buddies?
I actually think it's worse if you just take it, but I still wouldn't give it to the cops.
Because don't they have people on the inside at the police force who might...
A lot of narcos usually do, yeah. But,
But then let them use those connections to get it back.
Yeah.
Like the innocent person, they're not going to go after them for doing what, quote, the societal right thing would be to do, you know?
Yeah.
We got a text from somebody who said that her dad and her brother were on this fishing trip in Belize, and they were told by locals, do not touch any packages you see on the beach or floating in the water because they are owned by the cartel. They belong to the cartel. Don't touch them. They don't belong to you. They don't belong to anybody but them, and you just leave them.
Isn't it fascinating, though, how, like, a group of people have effectively taken over society, like, in certain parts of the world?
Yeah.
That a cartel is stronger than any police force or any government, and that the population is in complete fear of them because they run everything.
Well, it's because they murder anyone who gets in their way.
Or chop off their hands.
And any cop, like, I mean, you look even in Mexico, where they have a lot of drug issues with the cartels, police officers have to wear masks so they can't be identified by cartel members and their families, like, otherwise would be murdered.
Yeah, and
you know,
the cartel owns lots of police officers, lots of sections of the military, and it's fascinating how one group could just effectively take over a society like that and how there has been no way to deconstruct it.
Yeah. There's no way. They're too powerful.
Well, I'll tell you what you have to do. You have to kill the leader. And you need to... I'm trying to think of what I learned from Narcos. I watched 2 seasons of that show.
What a great show.
And they took down one of them.
Yeah, but the rest of the Medellin cartel still exists. You know?
Yeah.
You cut off one head and two more pop up. Yeah. It's
like weeding. Yeah. Never works.
Well, that's why, you know, they say the war on drugs is unwinnable. And in most cases, you just need to, like, look at the people who are using the drugs and try and stop them from wanting to use it and stop criminalizing it and turn it into, like, what it is, which is, for most people who have major drug problems, they're self-medicating because of other shit going on in their life.
Mm-hmm.
I'm 100% in favor of them decriminalizing all hard drugs because, first of all, it costs us so much money to, like, house these people in prisons and stuff.
Yeah, totally.
It would be a lot less expensive just to put people in treatment programs and give them, like, counseling.
Mm-hmm.
It would be safer if they provided... I would even go as far as to say if someone's addicted to heroin, just give them heroin until they can get off, because the amount of crime that is committed for these people in order to source the drugs.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why you have a lot of B&Es and on-the-street muggings. It's people who are just trying to get money to buy drugs to feed their addiction. Mm. If you can put an end to all that,
mm-hmm.
I mean, people maybe will never get off heroin, but at least they're not going to be jacking you, you know, in order to continue their habit.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to be not in the hospital on overdosing on fentanyl because they could be given a clean supply. Like, it's a massive strain on society to try and treat it like it's, you know, a major crime and all the resources and the dirty drugs.
Is the reason that we don't do it because crime is big business, especially in the States? Like, all of the police
private jails.
Yeah. I mean, who knows about the States? I'm talking about Canada. It costs like $200,000 to keep somebody in jail every year for a year, you know? It's insane.
Yeah, that's a lot.
It's crazy.
That's crazy.
You know, and put the pedophiles in there. Put the people that are, you know, putting real, like, you know, putting hurting people.
Yeah.
But if somebody is just self-medicating with heroin and you can find a way to have them stop committing crimes in order to get the money to do the heroin, wouldn't that be like a huge win?
I don't think you're wrong. Certainly complicated, you know. How many people do you hear about who have a car accident and then get addicted to drugs that way because they're on pills coming out of the hospital.
Then they run out of money because they can't buy enough pills.
Oh, my God.
And then, I mean, thank God, Bundus, you never reached, you had that, like, moral line that you weren't willing to cross. But for most people, the cheapest way to get drugs when they're addicted is to slide into heroin.
Yeah.
Once you're trying to just take yourself out of withdrawal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it got pretty bad. I mean, put myself into a lot of debt, spending money on pills. And most of my day at the end there kind of became sourcing pills and just counting pills. And how many pills do you have to get through the day? And where are you going to get your next, you know, refill from? It just got to a point where I hated what life was becoming. It was impossible to enjoy anything anymore, right?
Yeah.
So how did you stop yourself from just buying heroin? Because that would be a lot easier to source and cheaper to buy.
It's a different kind of person that you got to source for heroin. You can, you can find your local soccer mom who had a car accident and she's got a pills that she's never used before. Or her dad who had cancer doesn't want to take their Percocets or something like that. Mm-hmm. And they got a whole stack of pills that they keep getting refills and they start selling them on the side. There's tons of people that will sell pills.
Okay.
I knew a guy who was trying, we would buy weed off this dude, and the guy called him and asked him if we could get some brown, but he meant hash. And the dealer was like, brown? Really? Turns out brown means heroin.
Yeah, I think I knew that. Yeah.
Through the conversation, they realized they were talking about two different drugs. And what was interesting is that the dealer could have found heroin for him. So it's not... it's not that hard to get. It is around.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
He was like, really? You? He's like, wait a second. What are we talking about here?
But you just always said that was a line you weren't willing to cross.
Yeah, I wasn't going to stick needles in my arm.
Yeah.
That's not what I wanted to do.
That's next level.
Yeah. But then, you know, like did you ever run out of pills, want more, and end up in a crazy withdrawal scenario? I know you put yourself in withdrawal by trying to quit.
Sure.
But there were times where the gap between getting pills was so large that you were in withdrawal and really jonesing.
Yes.
And in that moment, you were like, Jesus, if I just gave myself a little shot of heroin, it would like take me out of this pain and then I could have more time to buy pills.
No, I would, take T3s. I would just pump anything into my body to like numb the pain, but I would never thought to get heroin. It was never something I wanted to do. I would smoke weed. I would do anything to just subside the withdrawal effects
I knew a guy who smoked heroin.
Yeah.
He smoked. And I think that might be the first step instead of injecting it. Maybe you're like, well, maybe I'll smoke it.
I don't know, man. I want to say good for you, Bundus, but you can't really say that in that scenario.
It's all bad. It's all bad.
It's all variations of bad. We were talking with someone via text on our show who agreed to come on for the podcast and talk about how they went from, you know, just trying cocaine at a party to ending up like in a deep dive. And he's with us now. So, Franco, can you tell us a little bit of like how you ended up in the situation that you found yourself in?
I kind of just started like I did it first time when I was 20. I'm 22 now, and it was with some buddies and stuff. And I did it on a weekend, and then I just couldn't stop. I guess like
someone brings it to a get together, and they're like, "Hey, I got some coke. You want to try?" And you're
I've been around it before, and I was like, "Oh no," and then. I don't know, just that night I was just decided to say fuck it and then just snowballed really.
And were you like addicted to anything else before or like
I wasn't. Like I drank and stuff, but it was never like alcoholically or anything like that.
Okay, yeah. So how many just a group of guys in a room or are you guys out partying?
At an apartment, we were gonna go out later and stuff like that.
So somebody just laid out some lines and kind of showed you the ropes, and somebody obviously had done it before if they brought it there.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you do like your first hit, and like my fear is that I would be like, yeah, it's the best. What?
That's like exactly how it felt. Like I say it sometimes. It's like the first time I did it, it was like I found what I was like what I'd always been looking for in life.
And what do you mean by that? Like the feeling you had in your body?
Yeah, just the feeling. Like it just, I just loved what it did to me. And then from that point on, like I did it on a couple more weekends, and then it just turned into daily use.
And when you say you love what it did to you, were you a quiet person before and it made you more of an extrovert or?
Not necessarily. It's hard to describe. It was just, I loved it. Like it just
made you feel powerful. And
yeah, it made me feel powerful, like a little more talkative. Like, feel like I was a man. Like, I don't know.
A little sweatier at times. I don't know. I've seen people who are on coke. It doesn't look pretty when you're not on coke. But so you do it with your friends, then you do it a couple other times, and then you start getting that itch for that feeling, and you don't care that you're alone. Now you just want to get some. And do you tell your friends, hey, can you get me some more, or do you have to find your other supply so they don't know about it?
Well, I quickly found some other friends that did it, and then I did it with them, and then I had my own dealers, and I just into that network of dealers, and I could always get it.
Can you talk about the first time you did it alone?
The first time I did it alone, I think I was just in my basement just by myself playing guitar, and I was just like, you know, it would be good right now if I was high. And I went and got some, and then I stayed up. I work at 6 in the morning. I stayed up that whole night doing it, went to work, had to get more at work, and then... Yeah, and that was my life for about 2 years.
2 years. And so from when you did it that first time alone, how long does it take before you do it every day alone?
It was, for me at least, it was maybe a month.
Okay, a month of dabbling alone, and then all of a sudden you're every day.
Yeah.
How hard was it to get through work, or did doing more cocaine like just make it easy?
Yeah, well, I'd be tired in the morning, and then I'd pick up on my lunch break, and then it'd be off to the races again. And then, like, I'm a welder, so it wasn't too bad, but, I mean, it was still dangerous.
Yeah.
And at what point are you saying to yourself, man, this is just like they portrayed in the movies. I'm that guy now who couldn't, like, put it down after picking it up.
Well, I knew I was addicted, like, maybe a couple months in, but things never got bad enough. Like, my life still wasn't unmanageable.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, in my mind, like, oh, I'm going to work every day. I was still on time. Like,
you don't have kids. You're not married.
No,
I mean, you're
like,
20.
I still had a girlfriend. Like, things never got bad enough.
Did you hide it from her?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Did she ever know that you did it at all?
Not for, like, the first, like, 8 months. Then I told her, and...
You told her you were doing it occasionally, or you told her you're doing
it
every day?
No, I told her it was like every day.
Oh, man. Wow. But she loved that conversation.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah. It was a tough one.
Were you like, oh, I want you to try it. We should go down road together.
I think a lot of us have bought like weed illegally, and just that feeling of like sketchiness. Was it a million times worse when you're buying cocaine? Like, is that like a sketchy transaction, or is it super relaxed?
It wasn't too bad. Like it could be during the day, meet somewhere, not too bad. But like, if it's like 3 in the morning going to a shady part of town, then it's really bad.
Yeah.
And you'd find yourself in that situation.
Yeah. Yeah. A couple times.
Okay. So what's your daily like consumption like, and how much money are you spending when you're full on every day?
Full on every day. Anywhere from when it got really bad, when I hit my bottom, I was doing 3 grams a day, and that was around $300 a day.
Jeez.
Wow.
And can you even make that much money to pay for that habit as a welder?
No, you cannot. And I ended up stealing a lot of money from my parents.
Oh, no.
So that's, yeah. Man, that is so textbook. Like, your story is everything that keeps me away from trying it. Because there are people who've done cocaine, say, 10 times in their life. And they're like, oh, I've done it a few times. It was fun in the moment. They never picked it up again. But then there's people like you. And I think I would be a person like you where I'd just be like, yeah.
You know? Don't do it. I don't suggest.
Yeah. No, so I won't. I won't.
How did your parents find out? They were like, where's this money? And they suspected you?
Well, actually, where I work, it's family business, and my father, the first time, found me sleeping in the bathroom, and then, so that was, and I broke down and told, he knew something was wrong for a couple of months, like, I just wasn't myself, and then he drove me to rehab.
Yeah, and then, how long had this been then, over a year?
Yeah, that was a year at that point.
Wow.
And you go to rehab, and it's one of those things where you, is it a day thing or a daily program?
It was, like, it was Yeah, I was an inpatient 28-day program.
Oh, inpatient. Okay, so yeah. The real deal.
Yeah, the real deal. And that was the first time, and I kind of went just to get people off my back, like my dad, my girlfriend, and see if I could, like, stay sober, like, a couple, like for a while, get my shit together.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really do the work that they were telling me to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I quickly relapsed when I got out, and then...
Because you were doing it not for the wrong reasons. You were doing it for other people, not for yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, and then so you relapse, and then like all of a sudden you're like, what am I doing? Or like, how do you end up clean from relapsing?
So I relapsed, and that was about 8 months. And so, like I said, things never got bad enough before. This time they were getting bad. I mean, I was had no money. Girlfriend broke up. I got fired from my job. And at that point, like when I hit my bottom, I wanted to take my life.
Oh my God. And I didn't.
And I ended up checking myself into the mental hospital. And then I was at an addiction program at the hospital. And then I went to treatment from there again. And that's kind of where it all began. And then today I'm around 8 months. I think it'll be 9 months in May.
Wow.
That's
Congratulations.
Amazing.
Thank you so much.
And
so,
is it a struggle still to like stay away from it?
No, it's not. No.
So how is it that it's not a struggle? Like, how did you end that chapter so, like, abruptly?
So going to rehab, it was a 12-step rehab where they suggest, 12-step programs and doing the steps, and that's what I did and what I'm continuing to do.
Yeah. So if you were around it, like, if it was at a party, would you have to leave?
I'd say yes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm okay being around other people drinking and stuff and partying, but like if I could see it, I just wouldn't want to be in that situation anyways, because if it was around people that I'm with, maybe those aren't the right people I'm supposed to be hanging around with.
And what about that friend that brought it out the first time? Is he like, oh my God, I'm so sorry, Franco?
Yeah, but it's not his fault.
Yeah, nobody's bringing it out in order to like get you sucked in.
Right.
It was my decision to do it, and... It just turned out that I was addicted to it, and I'm an addict. So
do you stay away from alcohol and everything then now?
Yes, I do.
Does that be a trigger?
People suggest any mind-altering substances. And when I relapsed, I started drinking again first.
Okay.
And then within having my first drink, within 10 minutes, I was on my phone trying to get coke again.
So. Once you have a drink, like you start, everything goes out the window. Yeah.
But it's interesting because Bundus, who has struggled with addiction to opioids, you know, you can turn drinking on and off. Like you don't seem to be sucked in, or doesn't seem to be a trigger for you.
Drinking is not the same. Like with cocaine, drinking goes hand in hand. You can do them together, no problem. Opioids is a different kind of high. And for me, opioids, it was smoking. I would smoke like 2-3 packs a day. I just would love to get high in my car and drive around all day and smoke cigarettes, listening to music. It was my favorite thing to do. And it was so hard for me to stop opioids because it was getting in the car and driving was a big trigger for me. So anytime I had to go somewhere, I wanted to get high to drive.
I felt like that with smoking, you know, just cigarettes. I used to smoke when I drove, and also coming out of a movie when you couldn't smoke for 2.5-3 hours.
Yeah.
That was like one of my favorite times to light a smoke.
Yeah.
Yeah, I still smoke, and smoking and driving is my favorite thing.
Yeah. Karma stink.
Hey, there's worse things in life.
Exactly.
Franco, if anyone was listening right now and like was in it deep, what would you say to them?
I just say if you're struggling, reach out, get help. I mean, there's people that have been there in the same situation and know exactly what you're going through, and the help is there for anyone struggling. You just have to reach out and take that first step.
And 8 months later, how much of what you lost did you get back? Like the job, the girlfriend?
Yeah, I got it all back.
Oh, nice.
Except the girlfriend, we broke up, but that's for the better.
Right. Okay. That was meant to be, yeah.
Gotcha. Well, look, man, really appreciate the honesty that, that you know, when you heard us talking about cocaine on our radio show, that you were like, you know, okay to talk about it with us.
Yeah, yeah.
If you saw a brick of cocaine wash up on a beach down in the Caribbean, what would you do?
I don't know, walk the other way.
Yeah.
Let somebody else find it.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe call your buddy from that party.
Yeah, there you go.
Franco, thanks so much, man. Appreciate you sharing it with us.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me.
Right? Like, that's why I don't want to do cocaine.
Yeah.
Because there's people like Franco, and I feel like I'm one of them where I'll do it and it'll just be too good it'll to not want to try again and again.
You
and
just
again.
Don't know. You don't know what kind of person you are until you do it. And then
I could be
screwed.
Wrong. Maybe I'd take it and I'd be like, this is awful. I never want to do this again, but I don't want to risk it. It's like I would never try heroin unless I was dying. And it was like, you know, because they pump you through full of morphine anyway.
Right. You'll be like, give me heroin.
Just, you know,
I'm
just
dying.
Try it. Just try it now because I'm already going to die anyway. So what does it matter? But not while I see a future where I'm alive. Anyway, our thanks to Franco for coming on the podcast. Our thanks to you for listening. And don't forget to listen to our radio show Monday to Friday from 5 a.m. till 10 a.m. on 102.1 The Edge.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink. All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone, like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.